And we're back. Daily Report, CIUT, and Phil Conlon confirms, yes, indeed, he's right. It's 612
Markham Street at 7:30 on Thursday night. And hear Robin Philpott.
Robin Philpott, who is also the publisher of Baraka Books. And, by the way, they've got Baraka's got a great novel about Sudbury, the labor struggle of Sudbury, really a historic moment when the mine mill and smelter workers union was raided. And it's a dramatic story that needs telling, and it's the author is Mick Lowe, and The Raids, and it's available now at Baraka Books. And I believe we are joined now by the proprietor of Stop NATO, Rick Razov. Are you there, sir?
I'm here, Phil. Thanks for having me back.
Well, always glad to talk to you. And you're on top of the most important burning issue of the day, which is NATO and the problems that are unfolding in Ukraine. And maybe I can start with the first one that I noticed today involving a general named Breedlove, which sounds like something from Strangelove.
Yeah, right you are.
What is he says, we are going to – the Russians have risen up there and taken over part of Ukraine, and we aren't. And I'm going to recommend something to call Chapter 5. What is he talking about?
Yeah, you're correct about the name. There was a recent article in The Guardian, actually, one of the better things one sees in The Guardian nowadays, a column by John Pilger, where he remarks, watching the Stanley Kubrick film, Dr. Strangelove, again, I think he said for the eighth time, and suggesting the scenario the West is playing out in Ukraine is evocative of that Cold War, the very dark, almost Grand Guignol, parody. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, unless I've missed it, that Pilger picked up on the similarity of the names the way you have. Mm-hmm. Philip Breedlove, to give even further substance to the comparison, is a four-star Air Force general. So he's, precisely the sort who would order the deliverance of, nuclear weapon, a nuclear bomber, a nuclear-tipped cruise missile. In fact, the video you're referring to, it's for all the world to see if they want to, either on the Stop NATO site where I put it, or in its original source at the NATO's North Atlantic Treaty Organization's Allied Command Operations website, ACO. You could just type in NATO ACO and it'll come up. And what you see is Breedlove talking matter-of-factly, as though the whole world was aware of the fact that the Russian military somehow has poured over the borders, seized Crimea, and annexed it into Russia, when in fact nothing of the sort has occurred. This is not even analogous, say, to the introduction of Warsaw Pact troops into Hungary in 1956 or Czechoslovakia in 1968. I mean, nothing like what he has presented has occurred. And moreover, as you mentioned, readily volunteers the information that being the top military commander, he's Supreme Allied Commander Europe for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which he inherited through several gradations back to Dwight D. Eisenhower, who first occupied that position.
Eisenhower was number one.
Yeah, he was the first Supreme Allied Commander of Europe for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization immediately before throwing his civilian hat into the ring in the presidential election of 1952. What Breedlove stated was that NATO takes very seriously its Article 5 commitments to allies. Article 5 is, this is available on the NATO website, but it's their mutual military assistance clause. It is their war clause. And even though Ukraine itself is not a full NATO member and would not come under the aegis of that the provision, surely any number of countries in the immediate neighborhood could be exploited as a reason for NATO to invoke Article 5 and go to war against Russia.
Hmm. You'd think that people would – well, I guess I'd have to ask this. How is this NATO's business? Where does Ukraine, you just said, is not in NATO. And I've been noticing editorial writers are all saying, well, what's Putin getting excited about? Nobody said that Ukraine was going to be in NATO. Could you straighten this out on who's been saying what about Ukraine and NATO?
No, in fact, you're correct technically that not being a NATO member state, it doesn't come within the purview of Article 5 or even Article 4. Article 4 is something a little less strong. But that was used, for example, for the stationing of Patriot Advanced Capability 3 interceptor missile batteries in Turkey, you know, Dutch, German, and U.S., you know, in the last 18 months or so. It was also used, incidentally, in Turkey for the same purpose, put in interceptor missiles in 1991-2003 in the two wars against Iraq. But Article 5 is something of an entirely different magnitude. It was used for the first and only time after 9/11 of 2001, when you know, the U.S. went to NATO headquarters in Brussels and invoked Article 5, which is to this day the justification for continued U.S. and NATO military presence in Afghanistan, and also for the now 13-year-old and apparently endless comprehensive NATO naval surveillance and interdiction effort in the Mediterranean Sea, Operation Active Endeavor, and other operations that are ongoing indefinitely. So Article 5 is has been used to wage war in Afghanistan. At peak strength, 152,000 troops from over 50 nations serving under the NATO-run International Security Assistance Force. So it is something we've seen in the post-Cold War era employed for you know, active war fighting, for the you know, the conducting of war.
Yeah, they've actually done it, yes.
They've actually done
it. Well, what's this raises an issue, too, about why there is not, and perhaps there is going to be. I just wonder how much stress and strain the EU and the membership of Western Europe and NATO, how much of this they can take. President Putin told a story about, he said, his press officer said, you know, Putin wrote a letter to the EU recommending ways to solve the problem in Ukraine. He proposed how that could be done. And he said, we were struck by the fact that we didn't get a reply from the EU, to whom the letter had been addressed, but we got a reply from the United States. And, mm-hmm. and they were wondering, is there anybody over there? When they anybody home?
In Brussels?
Yeah. Do you get the, it strikes me that people like Merkel are actually probably pretty heavily squeezed at this point. She might be smiling, but this is not something Germany could be looking forward to, this problem.
Possibly, though, you know, I disagree with a lot of people to a certain extent, to yourself, Phil, on the question of, you know, there being a third factor, that being the European Union nations. I think they're not at all reluctant collaborators with the United States. I think they're enthusiastic. And I believe they are no less imperialist, no less militarist, no less arrogant, no less racist than the United States in any way. And they have a history that in many ways is worse even than the American one, if we want to look at the past century, in terms of fostering fascism. I mean, I had occasion on Voice of Russia a few days ago to you know, remind listeners at that station that NATO is, amongst other things, a collective of all the former is in fact really the right word, fascist powers in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of Germany, of Italy, Spain, Portugal, Hungary, Romania, Croatia, and then, you know, fascist elements of the Baltic states and so forth. And this is part and parcel of the Euro-Atlantic heritage, even though for obvious reasons it's not touted. So the, you know, the fact that Putin expected any better treatment from the European Union is beyond my ability to comprehend. This is exactly what I would have surmised. You know, somebody on one of the Russian websites, and I believe it's RT commentary, I don't know who it was who put it down, said, what do you expect from the EU members of NATO? He says, when a U.S. president, or for that matter, Secretary of State, walks in the room, they all stand up. They stand up when he leaves. They bow when he talks. It's like a king holding court with his, you know, vassals. And there's no other way of characterizing the activity of the European Union. It's not an independent. It has no independent foreign policy, of course. Mm. It votes with the U.S. It walks out of the U.N. with the U.S. It penalizes and sanctions and bombs with the U.S. Inevitably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, invariably, rather, and, you know, I wouldn't expect any more. But anyway, you know, that be that what it is. The fact is what the U.S. is doing is disingenuously stating or implying or, you know, almost subconsciously, you know, planting the seed that, as with Crimea, so with, take your pick, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, that, you know, the Russian bear is poised to, you know, pour into the territory of a NATO member, in which case, you know, the Article 5 provision would be invoked. But You know, this is doing a lot of jumping ahead, mm-hmm. as in the Breedlove statement, where he never makes that bridge or that connection. He simply says that Article 5 commitments will be, honored and acted upon without suggesting, without filling in the blanks,
mm-hmm.
that, he anticipates or can somehow convince people that Russia threatens the well-being of actual NATO member states.
Yeah, of course, the Germans were very enthusiastic about sending their planes off to bomb Belgrade. I remember that they were saying that when they achieved the breakup of Yugoslavia, they said for the first time they'd actually used the word Sieg.
Yes, horrible. I mean,
in
they
a long
sent,
time.
They sent, they
I remember the New York Times actually underlined that. They said, I think it was Kohl at the time, and they said Kohl and his friends were all elbowing each other because they finally got to use that word again.
It was 1999, it was Gerhard Schroeder, and, Joschka Fischer is his foreign minister who authorized the use of Tornado, military aircraft warplanes for the war against Yugoslavia in 1999. And, of course, it was that same administration that sent German combat troops into action for the first time since World War II in Afghanistan under NATO command again. Again, not to get involved, my contention simply is there's no difference between the NATO quint, at any rate, the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, and Italy. I mean, they're pretty much on the same page in almost everything. Getting back to the Article 5 provision and the fact that this is being bandied about as though it's, something that could be acted upon at any moment is a very dangerous impasse we've reached, because it's suggesting that the U.S. is prepared to honor its military commitments to go to war on behalf of other NATO members with Russia and only Russia, and Russia, of course, being one of the world's two major nuclear powers, and one of only two that has the ability, triadic, if you will, ability to deliver those weapons, suggest a crisis the likes of which I don't believe we've seen, maybe not even in the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, I have noticed that, and the media has certainly been of course, they've been serving their masters, but three statements have come from Moscow saying, no, don't move, don't take another step there. And of course, it's not recorded that way, but something we are experiencing now is that the question is, well, it's been raised nakedly. You said you were not going to expand to the east, and every time we ask you, you do it anyway. At Putin, during this long press conference, and by the way, I don't know why everybody doesn't sit down and watch it through in detail, because that's quite an interesting discussion. He said, they told us that NATO was not going to expand to the east. And then he said they began to make these agreements and people began to get missiles put in their countries. And he said, we asked them politely, what are you doing? And he said, they told us it was none of our business.
That's correct. A couple of things, just to set the record straight. Germany has recently announced that they're sending 6 Eurofighters to Lithuania to join what had been, up until recently, a six-month rotation of NATO warplanes of four, a contingent of four. It's now, I believe, 12 U.S. planes, four French Rafales, British planes, Germany sending 6. You're going to have a whole air armada, literally dozens of fairly advanced multi-role warplanes stationed within a five-minute flight from the second-largest city in Russia, St. Petersburg, and probably, maybe a 20, 30-minute flight from Moscow, the capital. And German warplanes, moreover. For anyone who's interested in history, though I realize the world now honors Henry Ford's statement that it's bunk, unfortunately. But the other thing to keep in mind is that 3 months after, 3 years rather, after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, which, say, in 1994, Ukraine became the first former Soviet republic that was a member of the Commonwealth of Independent States. Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania never joined the CIS. So excluding them of the 12 remaining former Soviet republics, Ukraine was the first one brought into NATO's Partnership for Peace apprenticeship program, if you will. That's the very program that was used to groom and graduate the 12 new NATO members that joined between 1999 and 2009. And in many ways, Ukraine has been a bellwether for NATO in a number of other ways. It's one, to this day, it's one of only four non-NATO members that it's been announced will join the NATO Global Response Force the others being revealingly Finland, Sweden, and Georgia. It is the first country to supply a warship for the Operation Active Endeavor operation in the Mediterranean we talked about a moment ago, as well as being the first non-NATO member, or NATO partner rather, to supply a warship for NATO's naval operation in the off the coast of the Horn of Africa and the Arabian Sea, Operation Ocean Shield. So in many ways, certainly the West appreciates the geopolitical significance mm-hmm. of NATO as being a linchpin, ultimately, in terms of NATO expansion into the East. Incidentally, just for the record, I'm not trying to be an apologist for NATO, but to show how arrogant it truly can be. Perhaps 2 weeks ago, a fact sheet was placed on the NATO website refuting Russian accusations, one of which was that NATO had promised, or the U.S. had promised, NATO would not expand to the East, and they stated mm-hmm. that was false, and that, in fact, only a meeting of the North Atlantic Council, that is, of the ambassadors of all the NATO countries, could have formally negated that. I mean, that's your sauce.
Mr. Ford doesn't speak for the company. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you about that. Because Putin in his interview said, they tell us that they have no bad intentions, et cetera. So he said, we've asked them to put it in writing. He says they never will do that. He said, we've asked several times, just write that down. You don't intend to do that. And could you help us as a historian on there? You followed it, of course, very closely. This is Rick Rosso. It's embarrassing, isn't it? Mr. Gorbachev said that he was assured and it got, by the President of the United States. But what the heck is an assurance from a U.S. president?
Yeah, whose joke is it that, your verbal statement isn't worth the paper it's written on?
Yeah.
Look, in my discussions, and I'm sure you're encountering something similar, Phil, and a good deal of your listeners probably are too, the actual discourse or the debate, comes down basically to this. Let's be perfectly honest about it. The U.S. can do what it damn well wants to do, and that's good. Or the U.S. can do what it damn well wants to do, and it's not good. Mm-hmm. That's the entire debate. There's mm-hmm. no question but that this is exactly what's occurring. Joe Biden was in Kiev recently.
I think he's there now. Today. He's there today.
Yeah, John Brennan, CIA director, was there to coordinate the assault on the eastern part of the country by special forces, as well as right-wing neo-fascists with Pravi Sektor. All of this is fairly indisputable. Somebody has to go out of their way to deny the self-evident in these cases. So that the only discussion begins, do you allow one nation, which has now killed, 60 people in Yemen in the last 72 hours? 60 people in drone attacks?
Yes, by the way, I intended to ask you, but maybe we could just do that right now. That's a rather shocking episode, because they had sort of maneuvered the storyline, and one got the impression that they were not going to be engaging in so much drone killing, but as you say, 60 people, that's a heck of an attack.
And it's of course, in Yemen, where two U.S. citizens, father and son, were killed in a drone attack. Targeted assassination, indeed. They call it targeted killing now, but it's targeted assassination. And the statement by the Obama administration official about the 14-year-old, words to the effect that he should have chosen his parents better.
Yeah.
I mean, this degree of just hideous, brutal, inhuman, sociopathic thinking is appalling, but the world is not appalled.
Yeah.
The world is either uninformed or indifferent, and I don't know what it'll take. That's why I say this whole debate appears to be whether the U.S. is permitted to act completely lawlessly and brutally around the world because it's for the forces of justice, goodness, and whatnot, or whether we should have some minor qualms about it. The world should be outraged.
Yeah. Well, certainly there's an analogy. You can grab the analogy of labor contracts. You have a contract. It says this and it says that. And then you have a battle because management very often decides to override it or ignore it. And it's important to know what's in that agreement, and first of all, to have one, and then to know what its contents are. So I want to ask you about this one. I noticed that in the Russian statements in the last couple of days, they're talking about how to resolve this matter. And they said that, we had an agreement on April the 17th in Geneva, and the Kiev people, who are basically usurpers, they don't have a constitutional government, etc., they say that it doesn't apply to the Maidan whatever it is. They say Maiden, the way they express it, but they have some sort of category to whom any of these agreements don't apply.
Yeah, that's a code.
What are they talking about there? Could you
Maiden Square is the translation is Independence Square in Kiev, and it's where the demonstrations during the Orange Revolution in 2004 and early 2005. But
they're pretending they have a street phenomena, right? That they have to consult the masses. Is this what the game is?
Right, but the masses indeed are in their best manifestation, Svoboda.
The ones in the funny costumes with the lightning bolts on the sleeve. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. But in fact, the right sector and other just openly, undisguisedly.
They're the ones that made the coup.
Exactly.
And I got to ask you about that because it involved a British guy, an American guy, and now he's a Polish guy. His name is Sikorski. He's a foreign minister of Poland. Mm-hmm. And he had a strange episode that I want everybody to remember. They signed the agreement, and Sikorski was a witness on February the 21st. And as people were leaving the room, they claim, I don't speak Polish, but they say that he turned to Klitschko or Jani Bach or one of them and said, now you got to implement this or it'll all be dead. And of course, then the whole thing went up in smoke.
I remember your writing about that or speaking about that, and it was the first I'd heard of it. I want to thank you. The fact that the Ukrainian government of Yanukovych would allow Mr. Sikorski to come in any capacity, or that Russia would pretend that this fellow could be an honest broker is risible. We know his history. He lived in Britain during the 1980s, almost the entire decade. He was a British citizen. He was a BBC correspondent with the Afghan Mujahideen during the war in and against Afghanistan. Yeah, for 3 years, he was a fellow, resident fellow, I believe, at the American Enterprise Institute.
And he worked for William Buckley at the National Review.
Right. He also was an advisor for 3 years to Rupert Murdoch, and his wife is an American journalist, Anne Applebaum. So, to believe that he was a defense minister prior to being a foreign minister, no doubt is being primed for, prime minister or president of Poland next. He is a janissary. He is a quisling. Like so many, like Tomas Ilves, the president of Estonia, who was raised in New Jersey, or like Valdis Adamkus, who after living in Chicago for almost half a century went back to become the first president of, independent Lithuania in the post-World War II period.
That's proper training.
To take these people in any manner seriously when they're self-evidently satraps appointed by the metropolitan power, the U.S. and so forth. So, I wish we could cut through a lot of this unnecessary quibbling about details. What's at stake is
quibbling about quislings. Yes,
nice plain words. But this is a naked power struggle. It's an effort by the U.S. to incite a crisis, the dimensions of which we can only speculate about. But the one thing is clear: nobody's climbing down, and this isn't going to be diffused.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very important to underline. This is Rick Razov, Stop NATO. By the way, please go to that site every day, because I agree with you. I think that this has this quality of daydreaming or kidding themselves, or people kidding themselves about what might occur here, because when you have Breedlove and we have this man that Joe Biden, who talks very provocatively. I noticed, by the way, that Miss Tymoshenko was in Washington saying arm us to the teeth. And nobody remarks on, well, is this really the best way to resolve things? Frankly, the only thing that seems to resolve these things is sort of drawing lines. We went through an episode where the U.S. was about to bomb Syria last November, and that's still reverberating. I don't think NATO was very happy, but they basically said, you're not going to get away with this. We're not going to give you the vote. We let you bomb Libya. You lied to us, and then you bombed Libya. We're not going to stand by and say, oh, yes, you can do that, which means you have a grudge fight now between superpowers, right?
Yeah, we have to recollect, and I believe we've spoken about it on your program, that in the middle of December, that is perhaps only 3 weeks after the beginning of the Maidan Square, Euromaidan protest in Kiev, that the in the Russian lower house of parliament, the State Duma, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs or International Affairs Committee is a man named Alexei Pushkov, and he mentioned at that time, in his own words, he says, Ukraine is revenge for Syria. That, I believe, is a quote. And what he was implying, of course, is that as Russia had fairly deftly intervened diplomatically to prevent what Bloomberg News a few months ago said was hours away from the U.S. and France beginning a bombardment of Syria,
yes,
that Russia was going to be paid back by ruining somebody's war, projected war. I've heard a similar quote made by a Russian journalist quoting somebody in the West, stating we're going to give them Syria on their own western border, and that's in fact what's occurred.
Mm-hmm. This is Rick Rozoff, Stop NATO. Could you just enlarge again on this matter? Well, I guess it comes under the rubric that I often repeat to myself, which is we seem to be losing World War II, that now we have power in Europe that, according to Lavrov's statement, is people in Maidan Square, they get to decide whatever the policy will be, and that's kind of a mystery to us all. Who are these people again? We were told they didn't like oligarchs, but they like oligarchs. They appointed two big oligarchs to run eastern Ukraine.
Right, you are.
So, actually, I mean, they're telling us that they have the power, and it's a mysterious collection of really dangerous characters, as I could make out. But it's interesting how all of us have handed the states, Canada, the United States, have put into the hands of this mysterious grouping, Maidan Square, the future of the, I shouldn't say future, our fate.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I neglected to mention that Canada has also volunteered jet fighters, presumably.
Well, we appreciate the acknowledgement. Yes.
Yeah, to Lithuania. So, but I mean, if we tally them up, we may be talking 30 or 40 so far, which is an immense amount, fairly sophisticated warplanes in a country that borders Russian territory. I mean, Lithuania doesn't border, the main part of Russia, but it borders the oblast of Kaliningrad. So, this is even more provocative in that sense. Yeah, I don't know how much either of us believes, Phil, that, statements by the junta in Kiev that they have to bow to the wishes of the fascistic militias that put them in power, or how much they're simply using that as a way of circumventing the Geneva Agreement. But we have to recall that
there's camouflage, I guess, for their own decisions, right?
Yeah, I would guess. But we also have to recall that in 2003, George W. Bush went to Estonia and Georgia. You know, the two countries were to get under Russia's skin. That's where you would go at the time. This was it was later than that. I'm sorry, it was maybe 2006 or so, 2008. So Saakashvili was in power in Georgia, and he engaged in a repeated diatribe condemning the post-Yalta world, something out of Zbigniew Brzezinski, incidentally, Phil, mm-hmm. that all the problems in the world came out of the Yalta and the Potsdam meetings, and that once we could offset that and return to what? Europe under Hitler and Mussolini, that everything would be all right. And this is, in fact, what these people are, busily going about doing.
Yeah. No, it does appear to be. Again, it's interesting you would raise that. That is an echo of the early and ugly period of the Cold War, when they hunted for American liberals and progressives because we'd been betrayed by Roosevelt, and we seem to be the people who talk that way seem to now be running the place.
Yeah, and they're ensconced comfortably in both major establishment parties down here, foreign policy wise, indistinguishably.
Yeah, that I suppose that gives us a chance to close on Miss New Land. If you could just remind us again, how does she keep a job after embarrassing her government? Is she that strong that they don't say, well, we don't need Victoria after that?
That's another good point. Yeah, one would think that you know, Samantha Rice lost the Secretary of State position, you know, for you know, her comments vis-a-vis Benghazi. Did I get her name right? No, I'm confusing Samantha Power and Susan Rice. Sorry, Susan Rice. Understandable conflation, perhaps. But, you know, was given a nice consolation prize as National Security Advisor. So apparently, again, this total impunity that goes along with the lawlessness. There's no crime you can commit that you'll be held accountable for.
Yeah. That's how you get promoted, I guess. So it is strange love. Rick Rossoff, it's always great to talk to you. It's very informative. We look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, thank you very much, Phil.
You know, bye-bye. That was Rick Rossoff, Stop NATO, and a good idea. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Remember, Phil Potts going to be at Betsatoon Thursday, 7:30.
Thursday at 7:30.
Okay. See you next week.